Welcome to the Water Entrepreneur Podcast. This program features a series of interviews exploring the origin stories of startup founders, early adopters, and innovation champions related to their personal, technical, business, organizational, and financial journeys. This podcast is sponsored by Astera, the leader in remote Earth observation technology for the water business. Support is also supplied by Imagine H2O, envisioning and building solutions with the world's best water entrepreneurs. And now, live from beautiful downtown Encinitas, your host, Paul Gagliardo. Welcome, and thanks for joining me today. This is episode 4 of the Water Entrepreneur Podcast, and I'm your host, Paul Gagliardo. Today, I'm really excited to have as my guest, Dr. Martin Gross, founder, president, and CEO of GrossOne, a sustainable, effective, reliable, and economical algae-based wastewater treatment system. Hey, Martin, thanks for being a water entrepreneur and appearing on the show today.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me. Looking forward to having the conversation.
Cool. So, you know, many people kind of have a negative reaction to algae when you mention it. You know, some people conjures up the toxic algae blooms that happened in Lake Erie in 2014 and shut down the water supply to almost 500,000 people. When I first moved to California in the late 70s, you know, all the health food folks were, you know, eating spirulina, the superfood of the Aztecs. And then aquaculture producers are reminded of using astaxanthin produced from algae to turn salmon meat pink. So there's a lot of different ways, algae can be used or, you know, can cause problems. So you've developed an algae-based system that provides a benefit by treating wastewater and recovering nutrients. You know, tell me what the issues were that made you focus on this area of work. I saw in your CV, you've kind of been involved in algae for a while. So, you know, how did a young guy like you kind of decide to focus on algae?
Yeah, really good question. It's a non-obvious place to get interested, right?
Yeah.
So I got interested in algae during my undergraduate degree. I was in the genetics class, and back in the early 2000s, there was a lot of interest in making algae biofuels. So making biofuels from algae to combat peak oil at that time. Of course, the world we live in today is right back in the high gas prices. But at that time, there was a lot of interest in algae as being the solution to make a lot of biofuels out of. And I heard about this during my genetics class. And that night, I sent an email out to actually my co-founder of the business today, but I didn't know him back then, a guy named Professor Gio Wen. I sent him an email and said, hey, I know you're doing algae research. I'd love to have a conversation. From there, him and I have been working together ever since. I met with him and he offered me a job to be his undergraduate researcher on the spot. And we've been working together for about 15 years now.
That's great. Yeah. One of the things I was going to ask about is, you know, did you have any mentors or muses that, you know, either advised you to go in a certain direction or to stay away from a certain thing? It sounds like Dr. Wen was on the positive side of things.
Yeah, Dr. Wen, obviously a huge supporter. You know, he was my major professor during my PhD and helped come up with this algae growing system we have. So he's been instrumental. I think that's the obvious one. But one that I'll note is someone that is really well known in the water treatment industry is a guy named Tom Kunitz, who was previous president of WEF. And he was working with the water or Metropolitan Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago, where I met him. And I actually met him at an algae conference. And he was out working for Chicago, MWRD Chicago, looking for algae systems to recover their phosphorus in their wastewater and reuse it beneficially. At that time, I was doing the biofuels thing. We were trying to make algae biofuels, and he actually saw the poster. Him and his colleague, Kuldip Kumar with the district, saw the poster we were presenting and said, hey, have you guys ever thought about treating wastewater with this? And I know working with MWRD Chicago is an envy of a lot of water tech startups. We just really stumbled into it. So from there, started a relationship with them, and we've been working with them for about 7 years now.
Right. So, you know, every company starts with an idea, and you've kind of laid that out a little bit about where the germ of that idea started. But how did you take that idea, you know, from an invention, you know, to a prototype, whatever, and then actually into an innovation, something that actually worked and created value and something somebody would want to buy?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, if you think about where we started, which was trying to make algae biofuels, which is a pipe dream. I think it's really, you know, really difficult to do that someday, but technology is not ready for that. So, you know, when Tom Kunitz and came to us and said, hey, you know, have you ever thought about treating wastewater? It's kind of like, okay, let's look at this. And that really changed the way that we thought about things. At the end of the day, what we've had and what the research that we did was develop a really good algae growing system. And whether you're treating wastewater or making algae for biofuels, the system's the same. But what's really exciting about wastewater treatment is now the value of what we do changes from algae biomass to make biofuels, but rather cleaning water. And there's a huge demand for water treatment technologies, specifically sustainable ones like algae. So this is kind of like the eyes open for us, and we're like, okay, there's a real market here. How do we now tweak our system to effectively treat water and make that the primary value driver versus the algae itself?
Yeah. So, I mean, were these kind of, did you develop prototypes, you know, at Iowa State you know, how did all that kind of play out?
Yeah. So I had about 3 years of research at Iowa State, starting with these little lab scale systems. And right before I graduated, I had convinced enough people to build a pilot scale system at this place called BioCentury Farm. So we were able to scale it up to pilot scale to really just demonstrate the scalability of it. So we're at pilot scale when I graduated with the university. From there, we had enough data and research to win some SBIR grants, so USDA and Department of Energy grants. We've actually won about $3 million in grant funding, really to get the business off the ground. And we took that funding and took really what was a science experiment coming out of the university and try to make a commercial product. And really probably the key step there was partnering with a manufacturer that understand how do you scale this piece of equipment, you know, create a robust, reliable, manufacturable piece of equipment. So that was, you know, one of the big steps after we got out of the university. And then just being in the water space, you need so much treatment data and validation. That's really what we had done for about 3 years, is just execute pilots, scale the technology, and demonstrate it's reliable and robust, kind of to where we are today, where we have our first few installations being installed, at larger scales.
One technical question I got to ask, just because, you know, this is an issue I've had on nutrient treatment systems, especially in the Midwest, trying to meet the nitrogen and phosphorus rules. Do you have any significant change in performance, cold weather, hot weather?
Yeah. So the wastewater is fairly stable temperature, even in the Midwest. You know, it's coming into the plant at, you know, 50 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit and leaving the plant similar. So we don't see a big swing in temperatures. Our system's always within a greenhouse as well.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, temperature isn't the major driver. Seasonality, probably more so, just hours of sunlight. Since it's a photosynthetic system, you need light to grow. So you can add artificial lights, and some algae companies do, and we do in some applications to help steady that.
So you obviously have a lot of technical expertise in this area. You know, everybody that starts a company has to have that technical side, and then also have somebody with the business acumen that can keep the technical guys and gals out of trouble. When you started the company, did you kind of start as just you, did you have a team? How did you navigate that, you know, kind of the business side of the equation?
Yeah, really good question. Well, initially I was doing all the technical stuff. Now I'm doing all business stuff. So there was a transition somewhere. When I started, I got involved with a general accelerator. It's commercializing technologies out of Iowa State University. And there I met several mentors and actually some of our earlier investors. So one of my early mentors to help with the business side is a guy named David Furbush, who sits on our board today, and really helped me learn business strategy in addition to the technical work I was doing. And kind of from there, just spun into, spending most of my time developing the business versus the product and bringing on, highly capable technical people to run the operations of the business.
And that was actually one of my questions later on, but since you segued into it nicely, I'll just ask it now. In all the startups, the founder, usually does everything in the beginning. And then as the company begins to grow, their role has to change. If they want to be successful, their role has to change. Some founders aren't able, one, they don't see it, and two, if they see it, they don't want to change. How did you find that transition from, technical person to business person to, sales guy? I mean, you got to do it all now, right?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. For some reason, it's natural to me to kind of be flexible on these things. I have a mentality where I don't think I'm probably the best at doing anything, but I'm in a certain role and that role changes. So I try to, bring in people that can, every hire that we make, and this comes from our COO, every hire that we make is needs to increase the skill set in our business in some way. So we're always looking to grow in different ways, and I've been adaptable to learn the business side and have finding other people that can handle the technical side. So it's just been really just being about adaptable and moldable as the business has grown.
So you mentioned that you had gotten some early stage grants. Tell me a little bit about, kind of your whole experience fundraising. I know some people, are better at fundraising than they are at their technical, their fundraising capabilities are better than their technical solution. and other ones are just the opposite. So, and I know that in dealing with a lot of venture capital firms, private equity firms, angel investors, everybody has their own niche. It sounds like you had, some good, with the grant money up front, that certainly helped out a lot. But tell me a little bit about your history, about even just finding the right investors and, the right board members to grow the company.
Yeah, it's a really good question too. So certainly raising money from the federal government through grants is so much different than raising investment from institutional or angel investors. Coming out of the university, I think that tech startups coming out of the university probably have that advantage of raising some of this grant funding, because that's the world that you live in for so long is grant funding. So that's really what we did. We had an expertise in grant writing, so we went and won some of these grants. It's really an all or nothing shot, which is painful for grants, but we did pretty well. We also lost a lot of them as well. So take your bumps along the way. With regards to the equity fundraising, I somewhat enjoy it. I think it's a good break from the grind of the business, but it's certainly very distracting from trying to focus on taking product or developing a technology and selling equipment to going in a different way and really selling the business. But it's critically important. It's what I spend a lot of time on now. Historically, we've raised about $11 million in equity and then the $3 million in grants. So we've been somewhat successful. Certainly wish I was like a software company or had a SaaS business, because that seems like that's really easy to fundraise versus a big piece of equipment. That's probably been my biggest eye opener, is just, finding the right investor. Water is a tough place to be. For some reasons, it's a great place to be for others. From a social impact, environmental impact, there's nothing stronger than investing in a water company if that's what you care about. But from where we're at, being a big piece of equipment, capitally intensive, it takes a certain type of investor or group of investors that want to take a risk because you're selling into a regulated market and you have a big capital asset you're trying to sell, which is a challenge. So I give kudos to all the investors out there that have a focus in water, because it's, you know, being in the regulated space is tough. Certainly the ones that focus on equipment, I have a lot of respect for, because it takes time and patience. And luckily we found some good ones along the way.
Right. So when it comes to attracting customers, what do you find is your primary selling point? You know, is it the value proposition? Is it the environmental compliance? You know, and then not only how do you find the customer, but usually within any municipal organization. I worked for the city of San Diego for 25 years, so I understand that. You've got to find somebody willing to stick their neck out. You know, many agencies, utilities, they want to be second. They don't want to be first. You know, they if they want to be early adopters, they always want to be second. They want to see somebody else has done it first. So, you know, how did not only do you find kind of the customer, but the right person, the innovation champion within the customer to pitch to? I mean, I found that is almost harder, you know, than selling the ideas, finding who to sell to.
Yeah. You know, what we're selling, first of all, is a sustainable water treatment solution. It just happens to be an algae-based one. That's the easy part. You know, San Diego or, you know, pretty much any city over 20,000 person population has some kind of sustainability goals or target these days. The problem is some people are willing to spend money on it. Other people are just wanting to talk about their sustainability goals. So that's one challenge. But nevertheless, we have a very sustainable solution. The other thing that we need to be is cost effective. And it's not just being equal or slightly lower price when you have a new technology. If someone's going to take a leap, there needs to be some major driver. It could be just sustainability. And perhaps, in your role in San Diego, that could, I'm sure you've made decisions that are, you know, I'm spending a little bit more money here, but it's environmentally a better decision. You know, so it's looking for those type of customers, or in certain applications, we're just that much less expensive. So there are applications where the lowest cost by far solution, which gives us a leg up. But you touched on it perfectly. And this is, I think, the biggest challenge with innovating in the water space is there's conservatism. Everyone's conservative all around. The buyer, by nature, you know, if you're operating a wastewater treatment plant, what benefits you for taking risk? Or if you're a city council member, what's the benefit of you taking risk on a new technology? And then the other layer, the onion, is what about the consulting engineer that's recommending technologies? There is not motivation to take risk. So finding that first customer is incredibly difficult. I think as an industry, that would be a great, you know, way to move things forward, is somehow, you know, hedge that risk for early adopters. And I know groups like Imagine H2O and WEF and others are funding projects to create, you know, more, you know, validation and take on that early stage risk. But at a certain point, someone has a permit that they need to meet and your technology needs to perform. And oftentimes water is expensive, and you know, these equipment that, you know, like for us, it's every sale is over $1 million piece of equipment. That's a big risk for people to take. So you're exactly right. We've been living it for years and years. We've probably crossed the threshold for some buyers, but I imagine, you know, with our first few installations that are going in, so we're not the first, we won't have a first anymore. But you know, some people want to be the fifth and the 10th, and some people want 5 years of validation, yes, and 10 years. So we'll continually be knocking down those walls, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge. And one of our initiatives right now is to actually bring in our own capital to fund projects ourselves and offer treatment as a service. And really the motivation there is to break down those early adopter risk barriers. You know, if you don't have the capital commitment and you're really getting treatment performance, you know, it has to work or you're not paying, you pull a lot of risk out of the hands for cities or industries that need to make water treatment decisions. So, and we're putting that all together, and we should have our first project we're rolling out here later this year with treatment as a service. And I know we're not the only water company doing this, but it seems to be an effective way to deploy new technology.
So it sounds like you have a pretty flexible business model. Do you also lease equipment or, one of the other questions I had, I've seen companies that base their pricing on either cost plus a margin, and other ones base it on what they perceive the value is to the customer. How did you kind of navigate that particular conundrum?
Yeah, I think it's a hybrid between those two. We certainly have we have a margin target, and that can expand or decrease based on what the competition is in the certain project. You know, every project's different, and it's hard to say. You know, our equipment it's modular, it's fairly the same, but every site's a little bit different. Competition's a little bit different. So generally, we price our cost plus margin, but that does certainly swing from a project to project basis.
When you're pitching to or trying to sell to like a municipality that has, you know, a fairly rigorous procurement process, do you find that you have to kind of argue for a sole source because your technology is different than a standard technology? Or are you finding the engineers just say, we've got this coming in the door. We want this going out the door. We don't really care what the black box looks like.
Yeah, certainly I think we have a good case to be sole source with the issued patents on the technology. There's really no one else that, you know, does anything very similar to what we're doing with these rotating conveyor systems that we have that grow algae. So I think sole source is a fairly straightforward process for us, but different engineers take that to a different levels. So different cities have different procurement policies. So we kind of roll with the punches on how they want to sole source or select our technology. But at the end of the day, when it comes to bid day, there's no one else that can provide a revolving algal biofilm system that performs like ours. So we're really competing before bid day to get our technology spec'd into the plan.
Or is anybody asking for kind of performance data prior to, you know, accepting or I remember one project I worked on, it was a microfiltration process for water treatment, and we laid out performance metrics that the system had to achieve before so that they would be, acceptable to bid. Are you finding any of those kinds of criteria?
Yeah, I think it really in just two different ways. One is some states' regulatory agencies play gatekeeper and require a certain amount of data or treatment record, scale, size, type of hurdles you need to overcome to sell into a certain region. That's probably the most common gatekeeper that we see. We also do a lot of piloting. So we have a fleet of about 10 pilots that we have deployed at any uh-huh. given time. So if anyone is interested, how is it going to perform on our specific wastewater, even though we may have a lot of experience on a certain kind of wastewater, they want to see it themselves. And we do a lot of that as well.
You know, you mentioned kind of the unique challenges of having a company that's focused on a device, a large capital cost device, as opposed to a software solution. You know, how has that kind of informed your marketing decisions? You know, like who, you know, on your customer base? So you talked some about municipalities. Do you also focus on industries, you know, food and beverage, you know, that kind of thing? You know, what's kind of the mix of customers you're looking at?
Yeah, so both municipal and industrial, like you mentioned, food and beverage seem to be a good application. They generally have a lot of anaerobic lagoons or digesters at those type of facilities that we retrofit really well in the back end. Sorry.
That's all right.
Uh, On the municipal side, there's certain types of wastewater treatment plants that we retrofit better than others. And those are generally the ones that are hard to retrofit using bacteria or chemicals. That algae is just different, can retrofit them differently and have a cost advantage. That's really what it comes down to.
I can guess the answer to this question, but you know, some of the startups, one of the things they don't do is document their performance with their customers and publish it. So, you know, coming from an academic place, you probably do a lot of that. But do you find that some of the customers are either very willing to, you know, write articles and others reticent to? And do you make it a priority to try to what I call create the origin story by publishing articles about your results, then others can read it and look at it without having to talk to you, and they kind of make their own independent decision. So, that's something I advise my clients is try to publish as much as you can, whether good or bad or mediocre, but just get the word out.
Yeah, certainly. We could probably do a better job with that. I can certainly see the value of that. Some of our customers, the industrial customers, prefer no one to know about their wastewater issues that they're having, as you can imagine. While municipalities, you know, you get a variety of different operators or city staff that either want to promote their work or more or less. So it's kind of site specific, but yeah, certainly, you know, we publish as much as we can. Certainly when, you know, with like MWRD Chicago, we've published three times with them, and have some patents that have come out. So we try to make that available while other sites, it might be more earlier stage and it's really trying to understand the market. So we might not publish that until we have a good handle on how we can perform. But I agree. I think it's a great way to get it out there. And we certainly, I think we have over 10,000 data points now of treatment data that we have, and we can tell a pretty good story. So it's really just a matter of someone being interested and coming and take a look under the hood in a lot of ways, but we do publish some as well.
And I know you're fairly early, you know, in the company's life, but, you know, every venture capitalist that I know always has the end game in mind before they invest in anybody. Have you thought about your end game? You know, where you know, you're looking to grow this into, you know, the GE of wastewater treatment systems. Well, maybe GE isn't the Tesla of wastewater treatment systems. Maybe it's a better angle. Or are you looking to, you know, get it to a certain place and, exit? Have you even thought about, you know, the end game?
Yeah, I certainly have. And, you know, we've had a number of conversations about, you know, we've had interested suitors looking to acquire us already. And it really comes down to, so that is the end game, is one of the large water players to that, you know, our multinational, offer every type of technology, have an algae technology. Algae is a fairly immature technology platform. You know, us and a few others are making it less immature and finding real deployments. But at the end of the day, these water companies, the large ones, have an offering for every treatment plant and application that there is. And we're looking to make algae be a big part of the story. And that makes us really attractive to those type of companies that certainly can see the writing on the wall about sustainability and that playing a major part in the decision-making process. And the technology like ours, which is very unique, you know, we're one of, you know, 100 different algae wastewater treatment type technologies, but the way that we do it is so different. So in the world of public bid and sole sourcing and, you know, unique technologies build margins at these large companies, you know, that's what makes us really interesting is you can sole source a project and make a little bit better margin than if you're competing for, you know, a pump on bid day, for example.
So, are you having fun? Is this more fun than, you know, teaching you know, at Iowa State, or you know, how would you rate your level of stress, and would you recommend other people, you know, get into these kinds of things, this kind of business?
Yeah. Well, I do actually teach a class in Iowa State still, okay. For fun. Entrepreneurship for scientists and engineers in grad school.
All right.
So I do that, and that is the fun thing. Running this water startup is a lot of fun. It's certainly challenging on some days, but very rewarding. I go to work every day, and everyone that works for our company goes to work every day, and you can really feel good about what you're doing. There's nothing sleazy or feel bad about, you know, trying to sell, you know, and develop a new technology, let alone a sustainable one that's doing good by the environment. So having a ton of fun. I do joke around and say, you know, my next business isn't going to be a big piece of equipment. It's going to be something that I can sell in one conversation versus, you know, 5 years worth of courting. But, you know, that's the world that we live in, and it is fun. So,
oh, yeah, good.
Thanks for asking that question.
That's great. You know, it's got to be fun, right? So what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's considering getting into the water business as a startup? I mean, do you have, or maybe another way to ask this question is, you know, what was something that you didn't know, you know, when you started to get into this, especially from the business side?
So, I mean, it's not just because the Imagine H2O logo is behind you on the back screen there, but I think that's the hands down way that I would get into this space. One thing that I underestimated was just how unique the water industry was, how decisions are made, the network that's so critical in starting water technologies, and going through an accelerator that's just a general accelerator, which is what we did initially to learn how to operate a business, basically, is so much different than a targeted accelerator like Imagine H2O that focus on deploying water technologies. So I had an excellent experience with them. The curriculum and the network that they have is just outstanding. So I think if you want to be a water entrepreneur, I think that is the place to start, getting into that network and working with Scott and everyone there.
Great. You know, I really appreciate you taking the time today. You know, the conversation was really interesting. You know, every time I talk to somebody, you know, I get a little bit different viewpoint of the world, because I could never be an entrepreneur. I don't have that makeup to stick my neck out like you guys do. So I really appreciate, you know, everything that you guys do, because without the folks that are coming up with new technologies, you know, we would still be back, you know, two generations ago in the water business. As you said, the water business is really conservative, and we need to keep developing new technologies to push the envelope a little bit and move us into the next century. So thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. This podcast was brought to you by Astera, with additional support from Imagine H2O. The producer is Anna Gagliardo. Theme music by Gabriella Gagliardo. Yes, this is a family affair. Your host is Paul Gagliardo. If you have any questions about this podcast or the series, please contact us at thewaterentrepreneur@gmail.com. And please follow us on Instagram. We hope to see you again next time. We'll be right back.